Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the HTI-1 Proposed Rule Task Force. I'm Mike Berry with ONC, and I'd like to thank you for joining us today. All of our task force meetings are open to the public, and your feedback is welcomed, which can be typed in the Zoom chat feature throughout the meeting, or can be made verbally during the public comment period that is scheduled toward the end of our meeting this morning. I'd like to begin roll call of our task force members, so when I call your name, please indicate if you are here. And I'll start with our co-chairs and our Group 3 lead. Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Steve Eichner. Sung Liu.
Good morning.
Hans Botendijk.
Good morning.
Elaine Johansson. Meg Marshall. Glenn McDonald. Maryse Thunder-Bajan. And Phil Sutherland. All right, thank you, everybody. Please join me in welcoming Stephen Lane and Hung Liu for their opening remarks.
You want to kick us off, Hung?
Sure. I'd like to thank everyone for joining us for another meeting of the task force. We have a very full agenda today with a lot of invited speakers, and I think this will be a very informative and a productive meeting to help us move forward on the our stated goals. Steve?
Great. No, I totally agree. Thank you, everyone, for your time and attention this morning. We have a number of members of the public with us, a lot of the same folks who've been showing up every day for these meetings. So really thank you for your interest and attention. And as always, as Mike mentioned, you're welcome to use the chat feature during the meeting. And please also, if you're in the public and you want to make a public comment at the end, just raise your hand at any time during the meeting. We'll queue you up and have that ready. If multiple hands come up, we'll make sure we have plenty of time to address the issues. Phil Sutherland has joined us. Thank you, Phil. Welcome. With that, why don't we go, you can go through the review of the charge, Sean.
Okay. So I'm sure everyone is familiar by now. This is our charge, and highlighted are the charges that are most pertinent to the task force, is to establish a new baseline version of the US CDI from version 1 to version 3, and also to implement the electronic health record reporting program as a new insights condition and maintenance of certification for health information technology, health IT developers under the program. Next slide. Also, we will be making recommendations on the FHIR US Core Implementation Guide STU version 5.0 and the HL7 CDA R2 Implementation Guide, the CCDA Template for Clinical Notes, STU R2.1 Companion Guide release, and 3 US ROM. So our overall agenda is to provide input into the subjects on your screen. And in addition, we will also be providing a feedback on the ONC's request for information on particular topics.
The other thing I would just introduce before we get started here is that we do have a special guest with us to help provide feedback from the EHR Vendors Association, Sasha Termott from Epic. Sasha, you want to introduce yourself?
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for letting me join from the EHRA to join Hans in presenting some of our suggestions on the insights condition and certification.
And if any of you don't know Sasha, she was previously a member of the HITAC and has been on a number of task forces and work groups and is a friend to all. Let's see, the other thing that we are going to want to do, Hung, is just collect from this group any specific topics at the end of the meeting, any specific items that we've been working on in this work group that we think should be highlighted to the HITAC when we make our presentation to them next week. We're making a interim presentation and update on the work of the task force. And I think that many of you have heard us say that we're happy to give the high techs a heads up if there are any topics that are particularly controversial or they need to give some prior thought to. I'm not sure whether there's anything in the work that we've done here that rises to that level, but maybe by the end of this meeting, we'll feel otherwise. So why don't we go ahead? Back to you, Hung.
Thank you, Stephen. And so as Stephen stated, we have some special guests with us to provide some feedback on behalf of the EHRA on the insights, condition, and maintenance of certification proposal. Sasha and Han, do you have a formal presentation or just comments?
Excuse me, this is Hans. We have basically a set of discussion points, so no slides for us, and then we can have a little bit more free-floating discussion around them. So if it's okay, then we can jump in and give some of the perspectives, or would you like to go somewhere else first?
No, I think you're first. Thank you.
Okay. So a little bit of background and introduction. Not everybody, either on the call or on the task force work group, might be as familiar. So just a little bit of a backdrop. Both Sasha and myself are members and participants in EHRA. That's an EHR vendor association, and as the name says, it focuses on EHRs. But not only to that, we have about 30 members. At this point in time, and the combination of that organization covers quite a few of the EHRs that you see certified on Chapel. And within that group, actually both Sasha and myself are ex officio chairs of the EHRA and are active on the executive committee. Plus that we are respectively very deeply involved in the discussions that are going on right now in the various work groups around the MPRM and insights in particular. So as we talk through this, we will be providing that perspective of a group of EHR vendors, which also means is that in some areas we may have a variety of opinions and we might highlight some different perspectives perhaps, and in other areas there is consensus more strongly, and that's what we then put out more clearly and publicly as well. We are not at the stage yet that we say we have final recommendations. We are all working on it. There's a lot of material in there, 556 pages worth, and insights is a good portion of that in terms of depth and detail. So I want to make sure that our discussion today is put in that context as well as based on our discussions so far and some of the insights that we got on the insights. Before jumping in, just want to pass it to Sasha for maybe some additional backdrop, and then we're going to start with some general perspectives and highlight at least a number, maybe not all, of some of the detailed feedback on the individual measures. But we might not go to each one because there's some common themes there as well. But Sasha, before we jump in, anything you would like to introduce?
Hans, I think that was a good overview. In our conversation within EHRA, we've kind of identified some sort of themes of challenges or opportunities with the Insights program and the way it's structured, or things that are common across different of the proposed specifications. And then we had some suggestions about individual specifications. So as Hans suggested, I think we'll start general and welcome discussion as we then move into the specifics.
All right. So starting with a couple of general observations and starting with some of the timelines that are being proposed. So where we are looking at is that particularly with some of the dates that are around it, that we would the rule came out fairly late, is that we are looking at adjusting and suggesting adjustments to the reporting periods to start at least 18 months after the final rule date. And that comes into play, particularly that the amount of work and effort that needs to be done, depending on the organization, they may already have more information readily available. There are some areas that are aligned with CMS, other areas there's not, but there's still a substantial amount of work to be done. And the related to that timeline is where we're looking at simplifying a little bit easier that that on the one hand, it seems like that reporting twice a year, you're running quote unquote the same report, so you could do that. There's actually still a fair amount of work to be done across the client base to pull information together, given where the kind of environments that that we support. So it's not just a matter of running reports, it's also pulling them together and putting them out. So we are looking at a simplified form to only do it once a year from that point forward. Having though a 6 month gap in between the the end of the reporting period and the time that you provided, that's reasonable because that particularly allows for ensuring that all that information can be pulled together. And we are having some discussions around, okay, what should be the time span that we that is being reported on? Does it make sense to do it for the entire year? For what is intended to be obtained from it? If you take a certain part of the year, would that be sufficient? But part of that is that when you look at the timelines and what comes in there, directly tied to that is that we need to get the data from our clients effectively. We do not own the data. Clients do. Some of the data is managed in a cloud. Some of the data is managed on-premise, a variety of different models that are out there. And in order to provide this information, that typically means that contracts needs to be adjusted to allow us to do that with the data. So in that place is where we have concerns that it may take time before everybody is on board, particularly if it is ONC asking us and we have to turn work with contract updates and otherwise to have the rights to use that data for that kind of reporting. So that's the challenge there. So we're looking at how can we address that? What kind of flexibility can there be, considering that there is particularly early on a good potential for non-participation by a variety of providers because all the steps that we need to go through. One of the ways that we are looking at suggesting is to say is that there is the CMS program, and as part of the provider participation there, it may be considered as a kind of a condition of participation, attestation to it, that they will make that data available as part of that program. So those are the first two that relate with timeline and being able to get access to the data to be able to provide the information of interest. I'm going to stop there and see whether Sasha has any additional comments, maybe others, and then we'll flip over and we'll go to the next couple of topics. But Sasha, anything to add?
Yes, I think the proposal is that data collection would begin in April 2024. If the final rule is finalized later in 2023, that doesn't even allow 12 months before data collection would begin. And there's a lot of activity that has to happen in that timeframe, including development of metrics, distribution of the metrics to the client sites so they can be gathered, renegotiation of all of the contracts to get the permission to gather the data and use it. And certainly it'll be important to allow sufficient time for that work. One theme that I think we talked about a lot in EHRA is that many of the same experts at EHR development companies that work on other industry initiatives related to measurement, like CMS's digital quality measures or NHSN's quality reporting programs, analytics that healthcare organizations request of us, are also working on insights. And so we'll want to make sure that the insights efforts don't unduly distract from many of the other important initiatives happening in sort of the measurement space across the industry.
So I think from these first two is that that timeline and engaging providers are important considerations to create a practical, useful, and implementable insights program.
Agreed. To maybe expand on that theme, one of the recommendations that EHRA is making is that ONC permit reuse of the same measures between their existing real-world testing requirements, which in some cases cover similar areas of interoperability and certified software, and the insights program reporting, so that EHR developers and their client systems aren't sort of reporting similar things in a minorly different way where there could be some alignment and reduced burden.
I'm sorry, Sasha, you said reuse which existing metrics?
So today the real world testing program it doesn't require specific metrics, but requires developers to report measurements of different interoperability criteria in certification. So where there's a duplication of an interoperability element between real world testing, the existing program, and Insights, the new program, it makes sense that the same measure, for example, of API usage should be able to be reused.
Got it. And what I'm doing is I am, since you don't have slides, I'm taking notes as we go along, and we're gonna have the Excel team show those notes so you guys can check my work and make sure I'm capturing these things right. And Clem, welcome, it's nice to see you. Why don't you guys go ahead?
Sorry, I was on mute for a moment. Sasha, you want to go to the last part in that section? She might be on mute too.
Sorry, Hans. So I mentioned that this reporting initiative, we want to remain balanced with other initiatives happening in measuring interoperability across the industry. And one thing that some of these measures we have struggled with at EHRA is that it's not clear how we'll interpret the data or what the data will mean to us. The numbers may be large or small, but it's not clear if that's good or bad. And before we invest effort in collecting a data point, I think it'll be helpful if we have a solid consensus that it'll be useful to us to have that data, or perhaps we should prioritize collecting the data points where I think we have consensus that it will be useful given the complexity of the program and the need to sort of phase in additional measures over time.
All right. Then maybe go to a couple of the next parts. And from here, we're going to start to drill deeper a little bit. So these were some of the more general ones. But as we go in, we are starting to look at some of the more specific. So the way that the reporting and supporting documentation is being asked for is the general. That makes sense that there is that documentation. But we would like to see is that data can be reused. So you have when you go through all the measures, number of encounters is reused in all of them. A number of other ones are potentially reused. So we're really looking at the streamlining the reporting approach, which is much more of a detail, perhaps not from a high tech perspective, something of need to highlight, but it's certainly something that we're looking at. And there are a number of other reporting and documentation requirements that we're looking at to make sure that this is easy to do, quickly to achieve. And that in light of the comments that Sasha makes, where we have to have that additional documentation, that it's helpful that we really understand that we are doing it for a very good and useful purpose. We're also looking at that some of the information is appropriate there where requested, is being kept confidential, some of the underlying data and supporting documentation. So there needs to be some level of confidentiality for parts of the information that's being shared. So we have a couple of different areas that we are looking at, particularly to make the reporting process as efficient as possible, and that we can do it at a developer level, and make sure that the documentation that is needed to support some of it, that there is a level of confidentiality there. With that, I'm going to pass it back to Sasha.
Yeah, I'll just highlight ONC proposes reporting at the product level. And in discussion with EHRA, a number of developers have integrated products that don't differentiate some of the actions to be measured, like an API call, between different certified applications. And so if there's an ambulatory EHR and an inpatient EHR that share a FHIR API platform, it's not clear how you would differentiate a FHIR API call to the ambulatory EHR or the inpatient EHR or both. That's part of why EHRA is recommending instead aggregating the reporting at a developer level. So one of the things that I know we talked about in respect to the EHR reporting program, even back when I was in high tech, talking about this before, was how to measure a denominator concept, like how many visits or encounters a particular system has had, to give context to some of the other measurements. We took a look at the proposed value sets, SNOBED ones for inpatient and the NCQA value set for ambulatory, to determine the feasibility of using those for measuring encounters in this program. One of the things that I think is really positive is the alignment with how Quality Measures has approached defining encounters in the past. But one of the things that I know Hans has particularly called out is that there's not necessarily the same alignment with how interoperability standards like FHIR have defined encounters in their value sets. So we're making a recommendation to try to bring FHIR and CDA encounter value sets in alignment with how Quality Measures define encounters for the purpose of CMS measurement, so that a common set could be then used for insights.
And to add to that a little bit, is that what you can see is that there is a little bit of an ambiguity whether it's just the encounters that have that particular code that are being proposed, using SNOMED as the example, whether only those are counted, are they meant to be classifications? But then by example, on the using FHIR as the reference point, it actually allows probably about 150 or so odd encounter types, of which the indication is that everything within a certain branch of SNOMED is permissible. Yet, of the list that is provided in the proposed rule, only one can be found in that tree and the other ones cannot. If they're meant to be classifications categories, then there needs to be good clarity as to what kind of encounter types need to be bunched together, which ones are we only interested in and none of the others. So there's a little bit more of clarification that needs to be done, that that perhaps in the quality measure space was fairly clear and straightforward. But as you're working with the kind of data that's attempted to be obtained here, you would like to have it aligned with the actual data that is that is being exchanged and shared, where you would look at to say is that, hey, how many of these encounters do I have that are marked X according to its type? So alignment is important, and we would like that. So we are certainly asking ONC to work with CMS to get to that alignment and have clarity on how to classify, categorize, which ones are in, which ones are out. And then you can easily obtain it from the data that is actually being shared and utilized. So with that, we are going to start to actually get into the space of the individual measures that have been proposed. And we're certainly not going to go through all the details there of each one, because there are clarifications, ambiguities, clarifications that need to be provided. There are in some areas where there is a need, where there's maybe some duplication of denominators and numerators, etc., which when you go through that, that will really speak back to that general comment that we made. Can we organize it such that the data points that you're looking for collectively or across those different measures, that we collect them once. If they're being reused in other ones, then that's good. But we report them once, and then we can also make sure that we don't have any potential confusion about what potentially small variations are. So highlighting just a couple of the big topics for them that jump out. On individual access to electronic health information, we are looking at particularly the app kind of categories that are being used. It's one of those areas where how much do we really know as a developer of how our providers use the systems and what kind of apps they are. For ones that we develop and we work with, we have a good understanding of that. But in the ecosystem, as it's evolving, using a variety of apps, any one of your choice, we may not always know exactly what is happening, what they use. So we know what access is being done, but the kind of categories that are being asked to then divide the information into this different buckets, we don't know which apps are necessary in what categories, depending on which ones they are. And that would require a substantial amount of effort to work with our clients to understand what they, what actually is being used, and what those applications represent. So that's where we're asking that it's that we are looking at it from the context of what do we own and control versus what providers, and then have that more collectively together. So that's the main topic in that space. And let's go to the next one then. Sasha, you want to go there?
Yes. So the next measure has to do with CCDAs. And I think there's a definition given of when CCDAs are obtained, but there's also some measures that talk about CCDAs being associated, which isn't defined. So we weren't sure if those were duplicative or needed to be better defined, so we understood the difference. One of the challenges that sort of pervades the CCDA measure is the expectation of identifying duplicate documents. There's some extension of this, some discussion of this in ONC's proposal. And ONC identifies that if a document has the same identifier, it's easy to know that it's a duplicate, and we agree. They imply that there might also be identification of duplicates by programmatically determining if the content is the same, which members of EHRA were much more concerned about being quite complex. Continuing on the CCDA theme, the third set of measures that ONC proposes have to do with reconciliation. This is a concept that's familiar from promoting interoperability and MIPS reporting, which have had measures of reconciliation for some time. But we think there is enough of a difference in how ONC proposes it that it could actually be quite complex to implement. One example of the complexity has to do with when systems have automatic reconciliation as well as human performed reconciliation. Another complexity has to do with whether reconciliation is done document by document received, or all at once, maybe for multiple documents that had been received prior to the reconciliation taking place. And those are things that will make the measure more challenging and will require careful specification.
All right.
Hans, do you want to take over for FHIR?
Sounds good. A couple of ones on FHIR. It starts with supported apps. And in supported apps, there's a scope question that comes into play. There's a measurement referencing FHIR resources. And to have a more consistent view We believe that the scope should be the fire resources that you're actually certified against. We might have a variable amount of resources beyond that that we have available. We certainly do. And that can vary greatly depending on the application. So to have a good sense of this kind of measure to understand its utilization, we should have a more common base. So what you're certified on is more consistent at this point. So therefore, that seems to be a reasonable place to base supported applications on. There is the interest to collect information as part of the registration that can be then further used. But we have to be careful making them required data. So we can provide that in our registration processes. But if somebody wishes not to include everything, and particularly if it's not critical to the performance and the operations of the app that we must have, otherwise we cannot connect correctly. But beyond that, we want to be considered that if that's not provided, that that does not impact our certification status. It will be a challenge to help ensure that these apps are all contributing the data they need to. So that's a concern that we have from a process perspective and the implications, but we do not have a concern that we are enabling and providing the opportunity to collect certain data as part of the registration process. There is a part of it is that already a lot of applications have been put in play. They have registered having to go back and recollect some of the data that we might not have been asking for before should not be an expectation that it's an immediate and we can catch up with everything, rather that at time of re-registration and other natural points where that can be inserted, that's more a more reasonable flow for those. So that's one part of the fire environment that we are looking at and are concerned that that the process is as efficient and straightforward as possible, and that we do it against a comparable set of fire resources. We have two more fire-related ones. There is the use of fire, and that goes back to the same question. That's another measure, but also keep on looking in any of these measures at the scope that is consistent with what has been certified. There are a number of different clarifications when it's asking about the number of deployments that are out there. Is it really active at any point in time during the reporting period? Is it at the end of it? So there are a number of straight clarifications that we need to obtain to make sure that we all measure it correctly. And that's where in use of fire, most of these situations are. At the same point in time, there needs to be a general recognition that that when information is asked about which fire US Core IG is one using, that typically one is certified to using a version of fire server that is to a version of the core standard fire R4. We would not have necessarily, I'm actually not aware of anybody, but it could happen, but by and large, when you go to a next fire US core version in whole or in part, you are not changing and creating a new fire server. It's the same one. And therefore information about which version of the IG is actually used for certain transactions and therefore stratified by it, that's almost an impossibility. So that's why we are going to be suggesting that be removed. We're not convinced that it's helpful information per se. There's in the chapel that there's already information where one can see what one is certified against. But being able and needing to provide that information to stratify access and exchange, that's not natural piece of information that we would have and would be hard to include.
I'm sorry, Hans, I didn't quite get. So you're recommending removal of which requirement?
To have stratification effectively by US Core IG used. So are you using version 3.1, 4.0, 5.0, et cetera? That is information you can find based on certification and ASVAB in this so far in Chapel, but to stratify volumes of transactions and access, et cetera, by use of the IG, that's a different question because we are not separating data out based on the IG that indicates what's happening.
Thanks. And Hans, again, I as I said, I've been taking notes. I'm hoping that when you're talking, Sasha's looking. When Sasha's talking, you're looking. And that you'll correct what I've got here.
Yeah. No, that's not a problem. Okay, so here we have a little bit of toss-up. Sasha, I can go to Firebulk and EI Expert, or would you like to have one of those to pick up?
Why don't you finish those out? Yeah, sounds good.
Okay, so next one, Firebulk. Same comment, Fire resources as the scope to make sure that we are comparable. Here there's an interesting part that what is considered making it available? Is it make available to access and download, or is it that it's actually accessed and actually downloaded? So where do we draw that line? What is exactly intended there? So it's more of a clarification on what stage in the process of Firebulk production and downloading, where do you sit and what do you actually want to measure? And the last one, EI export, that's an easy one to finish the Fire components with. That's supportive. And we don't actually have any further comments on that one. That one was straightforward, very clear. And we don't have any comments at the moment. And that gets us to the last two. Sasha.
So the final two measures that are proposed by ONC are related to immunizations. The first is immunization administrations, and the second is immunization queries. Both of them suggest stratification by age group and by IIS that is reported to. And the stratifications for these add significant complexity. We would suggest considering deferring stratification and focusing first on establishing the measure in a simpler form. There's also some questions on these measures that ONC will want to clarify in their specifications around whether the administration has to happen in the reporting period or the message has to go to the IIS in the reporting period or both, since the actions that are being measured may not happen at the same time, especially if there's entry of historical data that does go to the IIS. So some detailed clarifications will be part of EHRA's comments to facilitate that reporting in a consistent way.
This is Steve Leitner. Just to add on, I think another challenge in that space is perhaps looking at the denominator. You might know how many things were recorded in the EHR, but if people have not, or if people have not opted in or opted out of registry participation, that wouldn't be included in the data at all. So again, that's not a developer issue. That's a data utility question in terms of looking at what is the end goal, what's trying to be understood here.
Yes. Right. If patients opt out, the number of administrations given and the number of administrations sent to the IIS will be different. But when we look at the numbers, we won't necessarily have insight as to why those numbers are different. So it'll be important to remember that the numbers being different doesn't necessarily mean interoperability failed. It could very much mean something else, such as, the patient's request was being respected. We'll have to be mindful of that when looking at the data.
Yeah, I was just bringing that up because, again, it's not so much a data collection issue. It's a data utility issue in terms of what are you comparing it? What is it being compared against down the line?
And that's really also then the general point of what is the main information we're trying to get from the data? Is it trying to see that the trend goes up generally? whether it's exactly in sync based on these kind of scenarios is not something that is of concern, but we want to see that things are going up, not down, or maybe some other areas we are. But that's really part of the question. What are we trying to achieve with it? And it has always been in any of the conversations to date on measures. What are we trying to achieve? And be careful that volumes alone in terms of measuring interoperability may give a false impression that more is better or that less is not good. At times, what we're trying to also get to is that more efficiently sharing data when you need it is that you're actually trying to do less exchange, but you do the exchange when you need it for the amount of data that you need, not send everything always. So that's, I think, the challenging part that on the one hand, it's good to measure, but we have to be very cautious that they are not going to be put in the context of an interpretation that is really not helpful and that's really not the intent of what we're trying to achieve here. And that's understanding that interoperability is improving.
And I think another point in the space as well is looking at respecting patient privacy. And you know, data collected in aggregate is one thing. Data with PII attached to it is a different matter entirely. And from the concept of a immunization registry, if folks have opted out of participating in a registry, it's because they don't want their information to be shared.
Right. So these were basically our main observations. So three different areas: the general overall construct of timeline, the construct of how information is being reported, and interest in alignment with CMS, but challenges on some of those key definitions, and then many of the topics that you heard are clarifications, ambiguity, feasibility of aspects of different of the measures, and that's where our comments will be primarily focusing on. And I think a couple of these certainly would be good insight for high tech to consider as comments as well. I'm not convinced that it needs to enumerate some of the very detailed statements that were made, but more the overall themes with some examples of where ambiguity is in play, that needs to be resolved, feasibility needs to be resolved, timeline needs to be addressed, and alignment with CMS. And those, I think, are probably among the key things that we want to address from a high-tech perspective as a suggestion from the EHRA. Sasha, anything else to add before turning it back over to Hung?
No, I think that was a good summary, Hans. And I've been watching the notes, and thank you, Stephen, for capturing everything so diligently.
Clem, your hand is up.
Yeah. The question of the duplicate documents is important and difficult, and it occurs in many contexts in information exchange. So, what are we doing about that? Can we force a unique identifier on these documents? How can we deal with it?
That's a great question, and that's a challenge, because the question becomes is that there's one part that you say, when you generate a new document, a new instance of that, it shouldn't have a new identifier because it's newly created. But at the same point in time, when you newly create it at a different point in time, is it actually still the same content that you had before? So you are challenged by the fact that on the one hand, you would like to have a document that contains the same content, that it has the same identifier, but that's not always easy. At the same point in time, if you want to identify duplicate documents based on content, you have to break open the document somewhere in the flow to establish how much of the data is different. And then the question is, well, how much is materially different to consider it a different document? If it's just one character off in the header, is it now a different document? Is it a duplicate or not? So in some ways you could almost argue is that how important is it to take those things out? Because you still have to process them. You still have to deal with that volume. And it's ultimately about how do I use those documents and the content to present in a good fashion and easy to manage fashion to the user that is going to use them, that they're not overwhelmed by the volume where there is actually content in multiple. I think that's more the interest that, but be careful trying to be precise about figuring out duplicates in account like this, because that's not the most natural way to go about it. It is, how do I manage it that the content is useful to the end user once it arrives? And the rest is just volume of data that comes around. We are seeing a lot of data exchange, and that also experiences a lot of duplicate data that is a combination of duplicate documents as true duplicate documents, it's the same, versus different documents that have to a greater or lesser extent duplicate data because that was already shared before. But the context within it's shared is changing. So what's really considered a duplicate document? That's, I think, part of that hard, complex issue.
Well, I mean, I think what's going to happen, the receivers will have such clutter that they'll just give up. I mean, if we hadn't all, it's really hard to sort through these things for a provider, when you kind of try to match up what's the same, what's different. I think we really should work on some kind of an identifier or some kind of a common identifier, something that makes this automatable.
And actually what you see there is that, and there's work going on across a number of members that you can see, that documents come in, and it's not necessarily identifier that helps with the deduping it. But again, is that that's only a portion of the data that needs to be considered. Because after that, once you have those taken out and say, okay, it's the exact same identifier, I already got it or not, that's easy. But then you still have that you need to dedupe the rest of the content where you wish to ingest that and not just view it. So I think from that perspective, there's also a lot of work going on to help with that so that the users can be presented with the data that is unique and different from what they had before and don't need to go through the clutter. There is a substantial amount of duplication of data that is the result of duplicate documents and duplicate content. And that's in the high percentage points of easily in the 90s.
Well, I mean, do we have an approach that's going to solve this? Or is there something cooking? Shouldn't we get something cooking?
Depending now on which hat I'm wearing, there are differences, different solutions, approaches that that different EHRA members are providing already, or and are working on to advance that. So there is definitely work in progress and available to help manage that, to ease that burden of sorting through all the data that is being received to get that in and manageable. So yes, a lot of effort going on there.
But yeah, I mean, I think just having careful, we'll destroy the value of right. interoperability by having so much clutter.
Correct. And the solution is not that everything has a unique identifier, because that's only part the content. Actually, the content to help that be improved, to make it easier to find it and manage it, is that there's good provenance data associated with it, so that the content is well identified in its own parts, that it's using a consistent vocabulary, that date times are present, that provenance is available, and that combination of information can help identify either exact or likely duplication that can be teased out. And there's a fair amount of work going on to make that much easier than it is today.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Clem. So the reason my hand is up is because I just wanted to emphasize the fact that this is feedback that EHRA will be submitting to ONC. It is not our responsibility as a task force to parrot all of this feedback or any of this feedback for that matter. I think, Hans, I know you wear multiple hats, very engaged both here, at HITECH as well as at EHRA. I guess I would be interested in your input, as you go through my note taking and develop recommendations and evolve recommendations in column G, that we try to pull out those things that really warrant and are appropriate to high tech feedback on this or task force feedback, as opposed to those things that you know, we just know that the ONC is going to hear from EHRA anyway.
Yeah, and that's mostly an example here and there to highlight that's why we are bringing it up as part of a larger theme.
Okay, Ike, your hand's up.
Thank you. Just to that point, I think one area that probably would be in scope, in effect, not just HIT vendors, but the broader community is looking at what is the goal of the data collection or the data analysis, and is the data being collected really useful in measuring what the current questions are or in the perceived future questions are? Because it seems to me that there's still a little bit of a gap, not just on the IIS measure, but on a number of them. Just making sure we're getting good and useful data becomes critical.
And that's probably one of the questions that within high tech we can look at as well. Are there any of these measures that we say, is that really providing the insight that we're looking for?
Lem?
Lem, your hand's back up.
Sorry. I thought it said lowered.
No, it can be confusing. No problem.
I'll try again.
Now it's back up again.
All right.
Yeah, there you go.
It's inverted, the toggle.
Okay. Any other work group members want to add here? Phil, Hung?
I guess the other thing that we can, from a high-tech perspective, might want to consider is looking at the reuse of measures. Again, it's that same context to a certain extent of what are we trying to measure? And I would go looking at reusing or repurposing. I would think that might be both a specific recommendation in this context, but also looking at a broader impact of, rather than duplicating data collection, let's look for anything we're looking at collecting. Let's do a quick inventory of things that we have already collected or are already collecting to make sure that whatever we're doing is significantly different, and or do we actually need to just change our original measure?
Hung, any other aspects or Stephen that you want to highlight here? And I will have a look, and lift out the additional themes based on the discussion and the feedback along the lines that I summarized at the end, what some of the key major themes are.
That's great. Hung, anything else?
No, I'd just like to thank Hans and Sasha for a well thought out presentation of their recommendation, and we look forward to seeing what Hans comes up with.
Great. Shall we go on to the next presentation, even a few minutes early?
If Hans and Sasha have nothing to add, I think that would be a good idea.
I think we are okay, and I really appreciate the time to talk through these. And it was a bit between the high level and the details, but where we use the details to provide a little bit of backdrop and insight as to why some of those questions and suggestions come from. Thank you.
Thank you again to Hans and Sasha. And I think, we have our next speaker available. Stephen, are you sharing your screen?
No, it's not me. It's okay. ONC with Shrin, yeah. So the next is the updates to USCDI V3, CCDA, and FireUS Core. Standardized API updates, recommendation. So a lot to go through in a short period of time. Also, just a question to the ONC team. It looks like on our spreadsheet, these items are mislabeled as having been discussed on May 4th. Because as far as I can tell, today is May 11th. Do I have that right? I just want to make sure we're in the right spot here. I don't think we've already covered all this on May 4th, did we?
Not sure. I know that the schedule got moved, but I don't know if Michael and Dustin, are these the topics that got pushed to today?
These topics that got presented, the OTEC team came and presented last time, but there wasn't much discussion, so we wanted to give time today to finish that discussion if folks had things lingering from last week.
Great. And is there a presentation? Is anybody on the ONC going to sort of walk us through that? Or you just want us to go back and revisit them? Just because you're just basically saying, hey guys, you didn't come up with any recommendations. Is that it?
Well, it's just the same presentations from last week. I can go find those if needed.
And Stephen, this is Hans. I think the way we talked about it and feedback, we probably still need to fill something in G. But generally, I think there was support for CCDA companion guides and FireUS Core that while at the time of the rule being worked on, the latest version supporting USCDI version 3 were not there. As of May 3rd, they are. I believe that the general comments was supportive of adoption with some clarifications that particularly in Fire, that what we have seen in the in the past with 3.1.1 and then coming up with 4.0.0. One of the reasons was that there's some corrections, updates that need to be made to better fit at the time USCDI version 1. That was not just an errata. So be aware that such kind of updates may still be needed, but still moving forward with the latest versions in support of USCDI version 3.
So I'm sorry, Hans, you said that the latest version was published just
May
recently?
3rd. Yeah, May so 3rd. Both, okay. Yeah, for both of them. It was 6.0.0 for Fire and the companion guide R4, both were published on May the 3rd. So they're out. I don't think anybody has implemented them yet.
So, sorry, you said Fire 6.0.0.
Yep.
And say again on the
companion guide R4.
Okay.
And I would say that's reasonable to support that direction with the understanding that some updates still need to be done, particularly in Fire space, as people are actually starting to implement against it. Because this is fresh off the press.
But my understanding is that we are looking to, that ONC is planning on naming the latest published standard in the final rule, right? So wherever we stand, if it's 6.0.1 or 2, that presumably that's the one that they are going to cite. Right, because the proposed rule summary, says we believe 6.0.0 will be published, and now that that's come to pass, yep. We believe, et cetera.
And we are generally supportive of that.
Okay.
And there might be an errata that comes out, but a like 311 went to 400. That kind of a change is not likely to happen before ONC finalizes the rule, assuming a full final rule.
Okay.
But it still may need be needed in order to support certain things.
When is ONC likely to do the final rule? Anybody know?
Al, your hand's up. Maybe you can respond to that.
Yeah, as part of your we don't know, but there's the comment period goes through June 20th. The public comment period goes through June 20th, which is the routine comment period. And then after that, there is a internal clearance process that we do that could take it. I can't tell you how long that's going to take and when the final would be published. I just can't say.
And are the comments public? I mean, as they come in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're available on regulation.gov.
Okay.
Great.
I was going to say, sorry, Stephen, the reason I originally raised my hand was because I was just going to say with regard to the versions of USCDI, Fire US Core, and CCDA, the reason that in the event that there is something other than 6.0.0 or release 4 published, whether that's because of an errata or something else, that's why the exact version of those are not finalized.
Makes sense. Okay. And again, I'm now trying to do a better job capturing some of the discussion in our spreadsheet as we go. And we talked about the ONC team also helping with that as well. And no offense taken if multiple people are adding to the spreadsheet at the same time. All right, Hung.
So I guess at this point, it might be we have 6 minutes maybe to go to the spreadsheet to see what's there and to
So again, we have been working down the spreadsheet. You know, row one of the group three recommendations tab is what we just covered in our discussion of the insights, condition, and maintenance, and the HRA feedback. Probably a good idea to go back and revisit some of the other member recommendations in row G, in column G, I should say, as we go, and see if we can compile any of these into task force recommendations. Again, we've invited work group members to refine their recommendations in row column G as far as they can, and to try to phrase them in, you know, the sort of the recommend ONC do something concrete format. So Hans, you've got your name on the four recommendations in 2G. Do you want to say anything about those? Do these kind of reflect your current thinking based on the EHRA discussions?
Correct. And I still need to go back in. HL7 meeting this week got me a little bit held up elsewhere. But that's on my plate that later today or tomorrow that I have a good chunk of time to do that.
Great. Okay. Did anybody have any questions or comments for Hans on the suggestions that he's captured here? And again, Hans, if you can just rephrase these as recommend ONC,
.. Yep.
That's what we want.
Well, I'd like to thank Hans, because he so often has the details needed to make the discussion more right.
I couldn't agree more.
Thank you.
There are a number of people who just add a tremendous value to these discussions. Hans is certainly one of them. Okay, down to row two. This was the USCDI discussion. Advancing to USCDI v3, and I think this triggered a pretty substantial dialogue that we've had here about how USCDI should be managed, or could USCDI be managed differently, I should say, so as to encourage and incentivize more health IT applications to get certified and more vendors to participate in certification, particularly vendors of specialized systems that don't attempt to meet all of the needs of a complex hospital system or ambulatory practice. So Phil, you put this into words for us. Do you want to represent that for the next couple of minutes until we go to public comment?
Sure, happy to, Stephen. So the thought here is trying to look at USCDI as we continue to add data points to USCDI, looking at the burden that introduces to specialty EHRs that do not track some of these data points. So, for example, I work with Yardi, which is a vendor in the LTPAC space, and we target the senior living population. But in order to certify as an ambulatory, we have to now build in pediatric measurements into our electronic health record, which caused a number of internal discussions and delays and finally going ahead with the certification process. But it was really a major hurdle for us to get over to look at, okay, are we going to track these metrics that are not within our population base? So this recommendation points to one of Hans's suggestions, where we look at, is there a way that we can parse this out a little more for USCDI, where if the EHR is tracking and sourcing the data that the EHR is required to include that in the USCDI set, whereas if they're not, they should be able to receive and consume the information. So, you know, parsing out, we certainly understand the purpose of USCDI is to exchange a common data set. But what do you do if you do not track those data points as an EHR? And I think of this as also there's an equity aspect involved here, where we have a number of community support services under HCBS waivers that they may provide transportation services or meal services, and they're using software to allow that. I think we want to have those types of programs have the opportunity to certify so that patients can access their data. And so I see maybe an opportunity here for ONC to really promote USCDI across a wide variety of these specialty areas. And I don't want to see it become a barrier to doing that. So I think looking at, as we advance USCDI between versions, we need to really study what the burden is for the specialty providers, look at uptake within some of these specialty sectors outside of acute and ambulatory, and, you know, really look at as, you know, make sure that we're promoting this into as many sectors as possible so that patients can access their data and that they're all participating in population health initiatives, et cetera. So wider net here. So I wasn't sure. Hans, I thought you mentioned on the call yesterday you wanted to take a crack at the formal recommendation here. I'm happy to. If you'd like, I can take a crack at it, but I wanted to give you first dibs since you had made the proposal on maybe how we can fix this.
Either way is fine with me. I will have time today, tonight, to take a crack at it, and we can go back and forth and make sure that we cover everything. So either way, if you want to take step one or you want to wait until tomorrow morning, that will be fine too, either way.
Yeah, maybe Hans, if you could take if you can take first, and then I'll just review that, and then I was going to refine some recommendations under group two. So hopefully we can have some interplay there between both groups.
Okay. And
get this resolved.
That sounds like a plan.
Thank you.
Okay, I've just made some effort to refine the language slightly, just some clarity edits, and move the justification off the recommendation. But I would, would really welcome, I'm sure Hung would also welcome further work on the recommendation. We had discussed this as a possible topic to bring to HITAC next week, sort of giving them a heads up that this came up in our discussion of the recommended change to the standard for USCD IV3. I think this is what engendered this discussion. Given, Hans and Phil, you guys, I guess I think of as the co-authors of this recommendation. Do you feel that this is either meaty enough or controversial enough that it makes sense to raise it with HITAC next week?
I think a heads up, just a topic.
I would second that. I think, we've had executive orders coming out around enhancing HCBS waivers. And, really, I'd like to see ONC put some more focus around some of these specialty sectors that are outside of the acute and ambulatory, and looking at the opportunities there. And I think we need some study around what the uptake is in certified HIT, and what, if any, barriers are preventing that with USCDI. So it may be a broader opportunity that HITAC could ask ONC to embrace.
Clem, you have a hand up.
Yeah, I mean, I think we got to be careful about how we say people should or shouldn't support USCDI. I mean, for example, for specialty sessions, shouldn't we say they should support USCDI if they carry any of that data or something like that, instead of them just being free to make their own choice?
And also, I think the overall recommendation, though, is that the task force is supportive of the movement to USCDI version 3. I think the point of discussion here is how the ONC approaches certification as it relates to all the data elements. I just don't want us to lose track of the overall recommendation, which is that we are in support of moving to version 3. I haven't heard any discussion about that not being supported.
I agree.
Yeah, I agree as well. I think just with each, it is a fairly significant lift as we change each version. And I know for LTPAC, version 4 contains a number of metrics of interest in our sector. So certainly advancing these versions is important. I think there's certainly burden involved, and are we by taking kind of this one size fits all approach, I think we need to start looking at that, where we don't want to start inadvertently excluding vendors.
So it sounds like for the purposes of the upcoming HITAC presentation, this would be a good topic. But
I tried to capture this Hung in the notes here, and any of you are welcome to to comment or add to this as you like.
I think overall, it appears that we might be fortunate in that we have topics that are generally not that controversial or that have inspired much opposition. So I think for the most part, most of our recommendations will be in agreement with the ONC, except for some nuances such as the approach to how we treat data elements, but also how, of course, the EHRA recommendations as well, which are very nuanced and very specific.
So. Great. I Hung, insofar as you are leading or helping to lead this group three, would you be comfortable representing this topic when we sit before High Tech next week? Or would you rather invite Hans or Phil or someone else to represent it or one of the co-chairs?
I think it would be good to have Hans and Phil there to chime in.
But in terms of actually presenting the evolving recommendation.
Yes.
This Hans, I just heard my name. I was gone from, I was disconnected and I just got reconnected. So I didn't catch the question. Sorry about that.
The question is just when we go to High Tech next week on the 17th, and I think we've agreed that it's worth giving High Tech a heads up that this has been a topic of discussion. And then the question was just who is the right person to make that bit of presentation? Is it, you know, me or Ike as task force co-chairs? Is it Hung as this work group lead? Or is it perhaps, you know, one of you guys as the authors, if you will, of the recommendation?
What about Hans?
Yeah, that was one of the options. That was option three.
I leave it to you, Stephen, Ike, and Hung to decide. But if you want me to do it, then I would be perfectly okay to do it. So if that's your preference choice, I'd be happy to. If Phil would like to do it, I'm happy to. Either way.
I mean, I think my soft preference would be to have Hung or the task force co-chairs do it, just so that we don't overwhelm High Tech with more voices, you know. And it is, I think, our responsibility in terms of our leadership roles here. So Hans, if it's all right with you, why don't you work with Phil on the recommendation language that, you know, that we would potentially put up on a slide next week. And then we can just represent that. And again, primarily just to give people a heads up that this is a topic that came up that we're going to come back to in our final recommendations. And we just want people to be aware.
Sounds good.
Okay. And then I think it's time for public comment, isn't it?
Okay. We're going to open up our meeting for public comment. If you're on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function at which is located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you happen to be on the phone only, press star 9 to raise your hand. And once called upon, press star 6 to mute and unmute your line. So let's pause for a moment to see if any members of the public would like to make a comment.
And while we're paused, I want to acknowledge that we've got almost as many public participants as we have panelists here, which is wonderful given the level of interest.
Not seeing any hands raised, so I'll turn it back to you, Stephen.
Okay. Hung, do you want to take us home?
Sure. So I think the last part of our meeting, so are we set for the May 17th meeting? We have basically one topic of special discussion, but the rest would be just a presentation of the recommendations, correct?
Yeah, I think we'll take care of the meeting on the 17th. I think we're still waiting for a draft deck back from ONC, unless it's buried in my email here. And then hopefully we'll be able to manage that through the email. Shall we? So let's look at what we have coming up here.
So it looks like we have the interim presentation on the 17th, and then we do have a further discussion for the request for information. And then from there, it's a sprint to provide the final recommendation for the 15th.
And maybe on the next slide, we can go through the RFIs that have been assigned to our group.
So it looks like for our group, near and dear to my heart, of course, is the laboratory data interoperability request for information. And then we also have requests for information on pharmacy interoperability functionality within the ONC Health IT certification program. Fire subscription requests for information, clinical decision support hooks requests, and fire standard for scheduling requests for information, and then the smart health links requests for information. So that is that will be, I think, generate quite a bit of a discussion, and I think we'll have good recommendations coming out there.
So yeah, I agree. That is a long list of RFIs. and we do have those all scheduled for next week. We thankfully have a little bit of wiggle room in the subsequent couple of weeks to dig into those, because I think largely the recommendations coming out of our discussions to date are going to be pretty straightforward. So I guess I'll ask the ONC team here in public, so for the benefit of all, what is going to be our approach for going through this meaty list of RFIs? Are we going to just have a slide outlining each one, or are we going to have somebody from ONC kind of representing them and sort of helping us with, you know, just what they're looking for? Are we going to consider bringing in some people who have even more fire expertise than those who are typically on the line? To inform us about subscription requests and scheduling requests and CDS hooks, et cetera, because obviously there's a lot of meat here. Or do we just, you know, as a work group, we'll rely on the fire community to be taking care of this kind of in the way that we're relying on EHRA to be taking care of this? And Hans, thank you for saving me and raising your hand, because I think you know more about this than I do.
Yeah, this is of these ones, I think the most technically challenging is the subscriptions discussion. I think that's the one that we want to be very considerate of, because there are quite a few open questions on how to address that, that all depend on some fire technology sitting behind it. So that would be the one. The other ones are can be elevated a little bit easier, but that's the one that has some very deep technical questions behind it that we want to be careful not to go too far in this group, unless we have others joining us with substantial depth there. That's the hard one.
I think it's important, you know, for us to realize that our role is to bring ideas to HITECH and subsequently to the ONC based on our, you know, perspectives and knowledge. Right. I don't think we are expected to become experts in everything under the sun. I mean, we're expected to read the rule carefully and to look for insights and suggestions that we can make. So I don't think, you know, this is not to lay anything, you know, heavy on people, but I think if anybody here, I know Hung, as you've intimated, you have a deep knowledge and understanding and passion for laboratory data interoperability. So I am hoping that between now and next week, you're going to look carefully at that RFI and make some suggestions. We don't have anybody here who's particularly a pharmacy expert, as far as I know. Though, you know, any of us who are, you know, clinicians deal with, you know, medication data and pharmacy data, so we can add some, you know, some useful input there. As you say, subscriptions is complicated. CDS folks also complicated and important and really touches on the decision support interventions that have already been discussed within the task force. And then I don't know if it makes sense, Hans, to reach out to anyone from the fire community to ask them to give us a little tutorial on some of these detailed fire capabilities. I mean, I think it would be interesting, and I suspect that there are people out there who would welcome the opportunity to contribute to our discussion. Do you know, within HL7, is there, I assume, kind of as there is within EHRA, a series of meetings going on of people preparing responses? Can you think of one or more people from that community who we might invite for next week?
I'm thinking of connecting with Brett McCarr. He has been presenting. He is one of the co-chairs of the U.S. realm that particularly thinks about these things as well. But I will check with him and see on these topics who would be somebody. I have a couple of names in mind that that can provide some background depth and address any questions that somebody might have. So I'll
let I personally think that would be great. You know, to have Brett and or others come and give us a high level, and you know, and if there are things in here that they've seen, kind of like what EHRA did, you know, these are the things we're concerned about, we're planning providing feedback on. I think it would be helpful for us, you know, as representatives of high tech, to have that level of understanding. So thank you. Yeah, and Brett is always a great addition to any meeting.
Great.
All right. Anything else, Hung, Ike?
Nothing to add.
Well, these are RFIs, or just going out to the public and asking for stuff, or when you're talking about requests for information?
These are requests for information that were included in the NPRM, where ONC specifically said, okay, we want information on this. Please tell us what we ought to do.
Okay.
All right. I think we have one.
Is there a fire standard already exist for scheduling? I wasn't aware of that.
There are resources in fire, and there is an Argonaut older version for scheduling. There are appointment resources, so there is material available, and there has been talk about in Argonaut should it be uplifted because it's done on an older version, DSTU3, not R4. Mm-hmm. So there are a couple of things that are fundamentally there, but need to be updated depending on the use case at hand.
Okay.
If it's around CDS, that's clearly there. Subscriptions, there is a migration path that is very intriguing. Let's use it that way. That creates some challenges. On the smart health card, there is a lot there. So those are a little bit more straightforward.
Thank you.
Right, Hung, you want to close us out?
Thank you, everyone, for attending. And we look forward to hopefully everyone's discussion next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.